Welcome to CryptoCast by Gunnar Cook, the leading industry podcast that brings together expert guests to discuss hot topics and useful advice for blockchain and crypto asset businesses. I am James Burney, and thank you for joining me today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of CryptoCast. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Alex Shen, who is a research writer at Monad, a new EVML1 blockchain. Hi Alex, great to have you on.
Hey James, great to be here.
But just kind of in terms of just sort of setting the scene a bit, just to get things going, can you give sort of a bit of background of what Monad is and what an EVML1 blockchain is for people who are listening?
Yeah. So Monad is a new layer one. The idea is that we would be the first layer one that would be focused on getting speed to finality for blockchain processing and also be EVM compatible. Ultimately, basically, we want to take what Ethereum has done and just make it a lot better and a lot faster.
And it's interesting you talk about kind of speed, because we're seeing sort of a group of different L1 blockchains being created at the moment. Just for those listening, can you give a bit of an idea of sort of the range of blockchains exist? And if you're a developer, you know, why would you be interested in one blockchain for another? Are there different dynamics you look at when you look at different blockchains? Why do we need more than one L1 in the world?
For sure. I think that there's a common concept currently floating of a rotator. So the idea of someone who uses alternative blockchains, and alternative in this sense is really referring to anything that is not Ethereum. But Ethereum, of course, really became a paradigm in the blockchain world because it created an opportunity to have programming on blockchain, or as it's commonly known now, a programmable blockchain through smart contract programming. The range out there is going to be a lot of different types of blockchains outside of ones that use EVM processing. So you have your traditional, really OG ones like Bitcoin, which through input output transaction processing, if you will, in a simplistic sense, has created a blockchain that's really good for ledger transactions. So that's really just looking at the amount of Bitcoin, in this case, that you have in your account. So it's really good at that. And then we have the EVM ones that we just talked about, which you can program, and that is processed through the virtual machine. Then also you have some other ones, for example, Solana, which is making a comeback. It also uses virtual machines, but inherently it's processed a little bit differently in terms of its consensus mechanism. So for example, it uses proof of history. And I think in blockchain, when you come outside of different purposes or different specialties that different blockchains can have that we just mentioned here, you get into how they're created. And that would be through the consensus mechanism. So traditionally, you might have heard terms like proof of work, and then you have now Ethereum moving to proof of stake and other blockchains such as Solana, which also uses proof of stake. So I think that those would be, Solana uses proof of history. So I think that that's kind of giving you a range of the different types of consensus mechanisms that are available. And there's constantly new ones being researched. I think when you're a developer and you're deciding which one you think is interesting, that might be more of an intellectual exercise. A lot of these blockchains also use different types of languages. That's meant to add efficiency and add specialization to what they're doing. So another one that I didn't mention here, but was also EVM compatible, was Fuel. And Fuel created the language Sway itself, which was meant to be much more efficient for its own processing of blocks and what they were trying to do. So that's an example of when you have language as well as part of the efficiency for blockchain creation for layer ones. I think also just to mention Rust, because that's also a very popular language that is just really clean and really elegant to use from a programming perspective. I think when you're deciding what to build, though, that might be more of a founder inspiration rather than a developer inspiration. So founders might choose different blockchains based on what their purpose is and also just how easy it is, I think, to develop. A lot of the other blockchains that are out there have created developer toolkits that just make it easier for founders, regardless of their level of development expertise, to build things. And so a good example of that might be Cosmos, which has their own developer toolkit, and you can fork a lot of the projects off the shelf and modify them and just ship them out relatively easily when you compare it to programming something completely from scratch. So I think that those would be the types of considerations you can look at from a deeper level when you're thinking of L1s. And of course, the world is your playground, especially in such a nascent industry. So none of these should be constraints for creativity.
And it's interesting, you talk about all the different types. There's obviously a lot of considerations to come in. Just kind of more broadly, what do you think the biggest challenges are for people involved in L1s and developing new blockchains? What kind of things are keeping you up at night?
So I think when you're actually developing a layer one, coming from someone who's not developing it. So for example, if you're trying to think of in your own layer one to build, I think challenges besides the regulatory come down that we're experiencing in the United States would really just be doing something that's truly innovative. And I think that's also what got me excited about Monad, because I have recently joined. And it took me a while to think of which project I really wanted to be a part of. So for example, if we look at the world of Ethereum, where we talked about programmability, and we talked about the different types of innovative use cases that we want to see in blockchain development, it's really difficult when you have something as exciting as Ethereum to do something new. And I think that's where a lot of layer ones struggle. So for example, you can focus on certain types of efficiency, but when you look at their code, especially just like going into GitHub, and if you're a programmer, literally scrolling through, you'll see that a lot of the chains that claim to be EVM compatible didn't really do anything that's new. Sometimes I would even think that, I mean, I haven't looked and I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying like it could literally be a fork of existing blockchains. And then it can be kind of, there can be schemes in which you have people come onto the chain. And in the beginning, it's going to be super fast because it's not congested. There's not that many users, et cetera. But as time goes on and you gain more users, it kind of defaults to the same issues that you're experiencing on Ethereum today. So I think that being innovative and truly doing something different but good is really difficult. So I think that's one aspect of it. And I think in general, the challenges are making it more efficient, as in blockchain principles themselves. So there are well-known issues within the blockchain industry. So one could be state bloat. And the idea is that over time, you'll just need a lot of places to store your data. And so we're constantly thinking of new ways to make it easier, or in the sense that you require less data to get the same results and the same levels of confidence when communicating with the blockchain and any protocol that's on the blockchain. So I think that's an example of a challenge from a technical perspective. If we're to talk about something a little bit generally basic, we have the trilemma, which is the idea that you're always going to be sacrificing some amount of decentralization for security and for processing speed. So I think that those are trade-offs that are constantly being thought of and how we can improve them. And examples of where it's really changed over the years has been layer twos, where you have roll-ups take away a lot of the burden from layer ones. But as Vitalik mentions as well, layer twos are not the ultimate solution, although they're a really good middle way in the meantime, where you can have it is factual that burden is being taken away from the layer one in terms of processing many transactions, but it's over time going to experience the same issues as the trilemma that we mentioned. So I think the second category of challenges from a technical perspective would be these solutions that we need over the longer term in order for blockchain to just be better.
And it's interesting how you talk about kind of some of these things has to be dealt with on an ongoing basis and improved. Lastly, just can you give ideas to what you see as kind of being the future of blockchain development? What's got you excited, and what do you think is going to come down in the short to medium term?
Yeah. So in the short term, Monad ourselves are going to be shipping our testnet. So I think that's going to be really exciting. And putting the year and year plus now of work to the test will really be a true milestone for us. So for me, that's personally quite exciting. In general, I think within blockchain, this is a time to see regulation play out. I think a lot of people are scared of the regulation that's coming out just because it's going to be new and it's going to shift the industry a little bit. But to be honest, I think having come from a traditional finance background, there's really not much to be scared of, because ultimately a lot of the regulation that will be put in place will ultimately protect consumers and allow it to go mainstream. I think one of the general consumer-facing challenges that blockchain experiences is that currently a lot of the ways of interacting with blockchains or owning cryptocurrencies feels quite intimidating because it's quite raw and there's a lot of rules to follow just just rules, for example, like, you know, not your keys, not your coins, like remembering seed phrases, etc. So I think that with regulations, like not the ones that are currently coming down now, because I think it's a little bit more focused on categorizing crypto assets. But apart from that, in the longer term, that type of regulation should be more helpful than hurtful for our industry. And I think in the longer term, of course, I would love to see all the challenges that we had just talked about come to solution. So I do think that there's going to be so many new and innovative solutions that come out solving for a lot of these. That's going to be, that will make blockchain more accessible, more sustainable, and just really cool things to come out of it. There's so much talent in the industry. And although it is a bear market, including the macro economy, we see so many talented people continue to enter the industry and work on new things and be excited about blockchain. So I think all of that is really forward-looking for the industry as a whole.
Thank you. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. If anyone listening would like to reach out, Ella's email is Ella, E-L-L-A, at Monad, MONAD.xyz. Thank you for coming on. It's been fantastic.
Thanks so much, James. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to CryptoCast by Gunnar Cook. Gunnar Cook is a market-leading law firm advising on blockchain, Web3, crypto assets, and DeFi. Our members have been heavily involved in helping to shape the legal and regulatory framework for blockchain and crypto assets. Our team works across multiple jurisdictions, including Germany and the US. We are the only UK law firm to officially accept payments in crypto. Our client base is more than 150. Before we go, if you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on your podcast service and make sure you're following Gunnar Cook on social media and sign up to our CryptoCast mailing list on the Gunnar Cook website. Thank you for listening.